Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnton.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming. This is Chris Arnton, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron, wishing you all a happy Tuesday. And on this, I have to look at my calendar to see what date it is. This is on this Tuesday, which is the 29th of September. Sorry about that. And I'm very happy to have, for the first time in my studio, Stephen Atkinson, who is the North American Director of Ministry for a Christian Witness to Israel. They're more well-known as the acronym CWI, Christian Witness to Israel. And he is also an associate pastor of a Presbyterian church in Arkansas, which is Covenant Church, and that is a congregation in the PCA, Presbyterian Church in America, one of the largest of the conservative, Bible-believing, and thoroughly Calvinistic Presbyterian denominations in existence. And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you back to Iron Sharpens Iron, and for the first time as a guest right inside my own studio, Stephen Atkinson.
It's a joy to be here, Chris. Yes, I've been with you in the past by phone line, but now I'm here right in your midst.
And I want to right away let our listeners know that if you have any interest in joining us on the air with a question, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen @gmail.com. And if you send us a question, please give us your first name at least, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Well, first of all, before we even go into your own personal testimony of how you came to Christ, and I know that you were born and raised in Northern Ireland, and we'll get more into that as well. But tell us something about CWI, Christian Witness to Israel.
Well, Christian Witness to Israel is a historic mission to the Jewish people that really came out of a theological burden from the Scots Presbyterians in the 1800s. Of course, Reformed Baptists as well were involved in supporting and even preaching. C.H. Spurgeon preached for our mission on four occasions, did the annual sermon in his day. But the initial impetus really, I suppose the initial impetus really came out of Reformed theology in even the 1600s and the Westminster Confession and the catechisms, which really saw a continuance of God's covenant with the ancient people, and his purposes were not completely fulfilled for them. And so in the larger catechism, question 191, for example, there would be a calling upon the Lord to call the Jews. And so our forefathers in the 1600s saw that in the passages like Romans 9 through 11, God had unfulfilled purposes yet to call the ancient people back to himself. And so Scots Presbyterians in the 1800s very much were burdened in this way. Church of Scotland in 1839 set up a mission to the Holy Land, to Palestine as it was called then, with a specific desire to find out the condition of Jewish people, their need, and how the church could meet that need with gospel ministry. And so McShane and Bonner and two other more senior Scots worthies accompanied those two young, restless, and reformed guys and sent them on their way on a mission in 1839 that, as some have said in those days, that was akin to space travel, sending four of its best to the land to inquire. It was called a mission of inquiry, and to inquire into the situation of the Jewish people and their needs. And it wasn't just in the land as well. They were also traveling through Europe and finding out the condition of the Jewish people in Europe as well. Long story short, fast track a couple of years after that, and in 1842, Robert Murray McShane was in London at the beginning of a new mission. And so that burden, that theological burden, really morphed into a real mission, and or indeed several missions. And ours was one of them. In November 1842, Robert Murray McShane prayed the opening prayer for the beginning of a new missionary society. It wasn't called CWI in those days, so if some of you are reading Spurgeon's old sermons and you come across a missionary society called the British Society for the Propagation of the Gospel Among the Jews, that's our missionary society.
Wow.
And some of you will say, well, I'm glad you changed your name. CWI is easier to remember. But
the other name sounds more British.
Well, maybe it does. It then became the International Society for the Propagation of the Gospel Among the Jews. And we are an international mission, and we are an interdenominational mission. But we are very specifically a Reformed mission, and we have those roots in the Scottish Presbyterianism and in English Reformedness, I suppose, as well, English Reformed Baptists. But today, you know, we don't rest on our laurels, we don't rest on our history. We have a mission today that is to bring the gospel to the Jewish people, and that's where we really, I suppose, put our focus. And in the midst of many, many other Israel ministries, we want to really make the church aware that the one thing needful that the Jewish people need is the gospel of their Jewish Messiah, Jesus. You know, we hear so many different things about how we can bless Israel and stand with Israel and do this, do that, do the other thing. And yet, so little energy, as far as I can see it, is really going into, and perhaps even so little money is going into what it ought to be in terms of the church's mission. So Christian witness to Israel, I would say it's the church's mission to Israel is to have a Christian witness to the Jewish people. And so it's not our mission. We are to some degree a parachurch ministry, but we also are a church-based ministry. So I'm an assistant pastor. All our missionaries are church-based, and all our the fruit of our ministries are focused back into church life. So while we exist to some degree as a church, as a parachurch ministry, we certainly very theologically have that belief that all mission must flow out of the local church. And again, one of the burdens that I would have here in the U.S. is to see more and more churches, and specifically churches in Jewish areas, to have an intentionality to reaching their Jewish neighbor. I think theologically, as I said, 1600s, 1800s, today, theologically we have a scriptural basis and mandate for Jewish mission. And I would love to see the church really getting energized and mobilized to do that in this country, in the USA, because 42% of the world's Jewish population live here in the United States. And I think there's confusion over what exactly is our mission to those 5 to 6 million Jewish people who live here. And part of my ministry is really to preach and teach. I've been a preacher for over 30 years, so as to preach and teach and challenge and rebuke, if necessary, the church and bring the church back to seeing Jewish mission and Jewish and evangelism of the Jewish people as having a high priority in the church's witness and in the Great Commission.
And I want to let our listeners know, especially those who live near Carlisle, Pennsylvania, that Grace Baptist Church of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, has invited our guest, Stephen Atkinson, to speak there tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And Grace Baptist Church is located on 777 West North Street on the corner of Orange in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And their phone number is 717-249-4912. That's 717-249-4912. And their website is Grace Baptist Carlisle, and Carlisle is spelled C-A-R-L-I-S-L-E dot O-R-G, gracebaptistcarlisle.org. For anybody interested, and I will hopefully remember to announce that a couple more times over the next 2 hours when we are interviewing our guest, Stephen Atkinson. And I'm sure we're going to obviously get back into the specific details about CWI, Christian Witness to Israel, in a moment. But at first now, before we get into more of the details about this ministry that you represent, I'd like to know more about you, Stephen Atkinson. I know that you're from Northern Ireland, and we even have some common acquaintances, John Greer and some folks. And I just got an email right before the show from David Silversides, who is going to be a guest on my program, God willing, in the near future.
And do give him my greetings.
I will. And do you know Cecil Andrews?
Yes, I do.
Okay, there you go. There's another one.
Yeah, the Reformed world is small.
Well, tell us something about your own personal life and how you came to Christ in Northern Ireland.
Well, you know, I think we all come, obviously, by various routes, but we come through one door, if I can put it in that way. You know, all our backgrounds are varied. I grew up in a church that in many respects perhaps didn't have a clarity of gospel presentation, but the gospel was there, and particularly among the youth movement within the church. My parents brought me to church. I was involved in church life at various levels, and I think I simply grew up being a churchy person. I'm trying to think, when you interviewed me a month or so ago, and I know I gave a little bit of this history, so perhaps this is as a rerun for some of those things, so apologies to anybody who have heard the story before. But I do think it is important just for us all to recognize that the Sovereign Lord orders our footsteps through many, many pathways in order to bring us to Himself. So I was one of those persons that simply grew up in the church, but really knew nothing of saving faith. I knew the existence of God. I knew something of the reality of prayer. And I think I would have to say that, you know, the Lord knows exactly when He birthed me with that grace of new birth. But in my early teenage years, I was beginning to get an awareness of the God who is there. In the sense that I was praying, and I was attending the Means of Grace, albeit there may not have been as clear a presentation, but nonetheless, the Lord was speaking. I grew up with a knowledge of the importance of the Scriptures. My parents, who would say that at that point in time they were not converted, but they were just good churchy people, but they instilled in me a love for the Bible. And perhaps even a curiosity for the Bible. You know, again, I could criticize others, but I started to read the Book of Revelation when I was, you know, a young teenager, and I was fascinated, as we all are, in those mysteries and the curiosities, perhaps, that are there in the Scriptures. But through all of that, there was that sense of this is the Word of God, and my parents instilled that into me. And so through using the means of grace, this was the very means that God was going to use to give me my full-blown understanding of His grace to me, a sinner. And I would say it was around about my teenage years, mid-teenage years, probably around age 15, when one of my friends got converted and he started to speak of a greater reality. I think one of the things that, you know, when you grow up in a church where you do churchy things, You can slip into the, this people worship me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. You can slip into just that churchiness. But, I would say that the Lord opened my eyes just to the reality of it all, that the God that is there, the Jesus that died on the cross for my sins, and, I confessed him as my Lord, and, very specifically, the verse that was large on my heart at that time, that it was that he who confesses me before men, him will I confess before my Father which is in heaven. And again, that whole reality of being a Christian in the midst of perhaps a less clear church scene, or a church scene where you just did churchy things. You know, I grew up in the church choir. I sung in the church choir from age 5, I think it was.
And this was what church, what denomination?
It was Presbyterian Church in Ireland. And I have a lot of good friends in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. But as those of us who know the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, there is a mixedness to it. I wouldn't say it is a liberal denomination, but there were liberals within it.
Liberal than the American PCUSA?
Oh, absolutely. I have, you know, it is, I would suggest that it's one of the best mixed denominations. And I'm saying that because I know a lot of dear friends within the PCI. And in many respects, those dear friends are existing as independent gospel work, independent Presbyterians, and you know, whatever the ecclesiological inconsistency perhaps of that. I know that many of them live within that mixed situation, and they are pained and troubled by it. And so my heart goes out to them. So I wouldn't in any way classify PCI like some of the really rabid liberal denominations, by no means. I have a lot of respect, and again, I suppose respect for that place where the Lord brings you to faith. And so his witness is still there. You know, if the Lord can speak from Balaam's donkey, he can speak from any situation. And I, you know, I visited last year in my hometown, and I passed by that place where I came to faith. I passed by that place where my wife and I were married 33 years ago. And, you know, those are still very dear to me. Whatever we might say about the theological mixedness, our hearts still are very warm and tender towards those places and those people that were the very means which God opened my eyes to see that amazing grace, that I'm a sinner, that Christ is a great Savior, and my empty hand is placed in his nail-pierced hand, and that alone is what saves.
And I remember I interrupted you right at the point where you were saying that you were singing in the choir, and I think that you were going to get to the point where you actually came to Christ. And you're...
Yeah, it was, in my own experience, the church was having its communicants class, and I was invited to go along. I was age 15. I was invited to go along, as was the norm. But this wasn't just a normal thing for me. I wasn't going just to go through the motions. Things were becoming real for me. My understanding of God's word was becoming real. My understanding of prayer was becoming real. And so whenever the reality of the communicants class and what it meant, and what, you know, coming to communion for the first time, what that brought to me was a crucified Savior, and that I would be eating and drinking in memory of him, and I would be declaring my faith to the congregation of the Lord's people. And again, it was going back to that verse that I said earlier, as I confessed him very publicly, it was not going through the motions. It was a real thing. And the Lord has grown me immensely over the years, and I trust that I have grown in the things of God. I knew so very little in those days, but I believe very strongly that his work was real, and his work has continued, and his grace in my life has persevered with this. I believe in the perseverance of the saints. He has persevered with this sinning saint. And he has continued, and we are still here by his grace.
One of the things I was curious about is when you actually came to embrace Reformed theology, because I don't know how different it is in Northern Ireland, but the mainstream Presbyterian church, and as we mentioned, the PCUSA, which is the largest and most liberal, they do have their share of evangelical pastors in that denomination. But it's interesting that at least half of those that I meet that are evangelicals and truly born-again believers, they're not Calvinists. Mm. And I don't know if that is the same experience that you had in the PCI.
I would say in PCI there was a large percentage of the pastors that were not only solidly evangelical, but solidly Reformed. And in my young days, I owe a great debt to my colleagues and friends. And we would have gone year on year to the Banner of Truth Ministers Conference in England. We used to take a van load of pastors and several cars we would travel the length of Scotland and England to go to our annual pilgrimage to the Banner of Truth Conference. And I remember days when, 20, 30, 40 pastors would have gone over and would have enjoyed that rich fellowship in the company of 300 to 400 other pastors in the UK and in Europe who came together for the Banner of Truth Conference. So again, looking back on that, it really was, and this is not just backslapping, but it was iron sharpening iron. it really was. Because here was I, this young, fairly recently converted, not so well taught, but I was being surrounded by good men who had been better taught and knew the right books and were guiding me in the right things. I remember when I got my first Banner of Truth book, and I remember how I devoured it and how I started to collect more and more. And I suppose, looking back too, that my parents, the way they instilled in me a love for the Word of God and the reverence for the Word of God, and that this is, this is the infallible truth. This is the Bible. And even in that, just in that churchiness, that was for real for me. And I would say that my Calvinism and my Reformedness, or whatever way we want to term it, it simply grew out of that love of the Scriptures and a systematizing of what we have in God's Word, and whatever the Word says, it says. And so I would place my growth in an understanding of Calvinism simply in that development of an understanding of biblical truth.
And so when did you, in your Christian walk, now that we've brought you to the place where you become born again and taking very seriously the things of God and so on, when did this compassion for the Jews develop and this passion to reach them with the gospel?
I think it began early on theologically, but it's only been since I've been working with CWI that it has come through practically.
Did you ever even meet a Jewish person in Northern Ireland?
Well, you see, in Belfast, there is a synagogue in Belfast. There are about 100 Jewish people in Belfast, and about 1,000, maybe 1,500 in Dublin. But that's about it.
Are they natives of Ireland and Northern Ireland?
Yeah, largely, I'm thinking. Okay. Yeah. Maybe some English. London has 200,000 Jewish people. So there is a very sizable Jewish population in London. And there was a little bit of a crossover from, England to Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. But no, I would have, I can't remember even in my childhood years or my, early ministry years, ever meeting or knowing much about Jewish mission. But I think, I suppose if I were to reflect back, I remember the Lord, leading me to books like The Puritan Hope by Ian Murray. Mm-hmm. And the reading of that in my early student days, at least gave me that kind of old Scots Presbyterian heart for and burden for the Jewish people.
I think that the Puritan Hope is the most often mentioned book on Iron Sharpens Iron. It's amazing how often it comes up, and I have to get Ian Murray as a guest. I've never had him as a guest on my program, but I'm sorry I interrupted.
Yeah, well, Ian again developed, I developed a relationship with Ian Murray later years in ministry, which was a fascinating providence. But Ian had an effect on me in those early days, particularly pertaining to Jewish mission. But it was, as I say, it was in 2004 when I got a phone call from one of the board members of CWI in London, just asking me would I be interested in becoming the Ireland rep for CWI. And I was receiving the magazine for about 10 years previous. I was interested. I was praying. I had the theological burden. But I really knew very, very little in terms of the internal workings of CWI or the real practicalities of Jewish mission. But I was drawn to think about taking the post, and several of my other colleagues, and I don't trust my own judgment ever, in the company of many advisors, that's where the safety lies. And it was, as my friends suggested, maybe that will be a good fit for you. And I took it on. People had even suggested then, well, you'll probably do that for 2 or 3 years and then you'll go back into the pastoral ministry. Well, 12 years on, I haven't gone back into the pastoral ministry. I grow increasingly burdened and grow in my knowledge. I don't have all knowledge. Help us if we ever think we have. But I'm ever growing in the knowledge of the subject. It's a fascinating subject, and I want to disseminate whatever knowledge I get pertaining to the continued importance of reaching the Jewish people with the gospel. As I said, I believe we have a history, but we can't simply rest on those laurels. We need to get that burden back in the churches. We have these heroes of the past, if we're allowed heroes, but we have these heroes of the past, and perhaps we haven't realized their love for the ancient people and their burden for Jewish mission. And so I seek to bring that to the church and nudge the church in the right direction for Jewish mission today. So all that to say really is, initially when I joined CWI, I had the theology, but I didn't really have much by way of practicality and practical knowledge. As that has increased over the years, the burden increases and the passion increases, and, so I'm not looking back. I have a job to do here now in the U.S., and I'm thrilled to be here to do it. I'm humbled to be here to do it. But it is a big job. We're here with the most pro-Israel country on the planet, but quite often it is for all the wrong reasons, mm-hmm. and it is in all the wrong directions. Mm-hmm. So I feel very strongly that the importance of teaching a reformed understanding of the whole subject, so that we will have the mission right. I think we're running in all kinds of directions. Our mission to Israel is in a ton of different directions when it should be focused on gospel. It should be focused on, as Paul says in Romans 10:1, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is what? That they may be saved. And that's a no-brainer, and that's our single focus. And that's the single focus of CWI worldwide, to bring the gospel to the Jewish people.
And we're going to go to our first break right now. If you have a question for our guest, Stephen Atkinson, email it to us at chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please give us your first name, your city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. Look forward to hearing from you and your questions after these messages. And we'll be right back with Stephen Atkinson, the North American Director of Ministry for A Christian Witness to Israel.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said, "Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity, of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Attention coin collectors and investors. Long Island Galleries of Wading River, New York has brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars for only $54 per coin, with free shipping and handling for a limited time. There's a 40-coin limit, so order now while supplies last. Call 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express welcome. Prices subject to change, so call now at 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. If you prefer ordering your brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars by check, mail it today to Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. That's Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. Remember, they're only $54 per coin with free shipping and handling and a 40-coin limit. New York State residents must add sales tax. Long Island Galleries is honored to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. See the Long Island Galleries display ad at ironsharpensironradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen. And today, if you just tuned us in, we have been interviewing for the last half hour Stephen Atkinson, who is the North American Director for A Christian Witness to Israel. And he is based in Arkansas, where he is an associate pastor at Covenant Church in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And their website is covenantchurchpca.org. Covenant Church PCA for Presbyterian Church in America .org. And the Christian Witness to Israel North American website is cwina.org. cwina.org. We were just getting through hearing how our guest Stephen Atkinson came to Christ in Northern Ireland, which is the home of his birth, the land of his birth. And he has traveled here to New York to represent that very vital ministry, CWI, here in the United States, which has such a large population of Jews. Just out of curiosity, Why the location of Arkansas? Why did you pick Arkansas when you could have picked Brooklyn or the Bronx or New York, anywhere in New York?
It's cheaper to live there. the reality is that, again, the Lord orders our footsteps. Mm-hmm. And we tried to get over here in 2010. CWI wanted to move me over here in 2010 as an international, it was kind of a business visa we were trying to get. We failed to get that visa. And then I was visiting in 2011. I used to come over here since 2005. I was coming over here once a year, and it grew to twice a year on like a 2 to 3 week ministry trip, just beginning to make some connections, contacts in local churches in Texas, Mississippi, Kansas area, just in central U.S., in maybe sometimes over to the East Coast, but mostly I might backtrack a little bit. My daughter was attending Texas A&M since 2004. So if there are any Aggies out there, then you can give a whoop for Texas A&M. So I was making a few contacts in Texas and in neighboring states like that. After we failed to get our visa in 2010, I was visiting again in Mississippi, Texas, and into Arkansas. And I had a lunch visit with a new contact, a new pastor, and it was the pastor of Covenant Church Fayetteville. And we spoke together, and our hearts warmed with regard to the ministry. And the pastor simply said, "You know, we'd love to have this ministry here. You know, can we call you as assistant pastor?" And I said, "Well, yeah, sure." His one rider was, "Well, we can't pay you, but we would love to call you because we feel this ministry is very important." And so it was that church called me to be an assistant pastor, to do the work of Christian Witness to Israel, really. So although I'm assistant pastor there, it was to do a church-based mission to develop CWI from the Arkansas base, and to travel as I'm doing at the moment, travel all over the U.S. and mostly by car. I travel 30 to 40,000 miles a year by car, visiting churches, making new connections, visiting Jewish believers, visiting church individuals who need help in reaching their Jewish neighbors, preaching and teaching in churches, etc., etc. So it was that church, and specifically that pastor, and that lunch visit that then grew into a call that came, and that then was the call that worked with regard to the visa. And since then, we now have a green card, so we're good for 10 years. And we would trust also that we would maybe go to citizenship a few years down the line as well. My long-term aim is here. My long-term ministry is here. I'm very grateful for the way in which the Lord orders the footsteps. And so that's why currently I'm in Arkansas. And again, the amazing thing is that the Lord has brought Jewish people across my path. Arkansas is not Jew central by any means, but the Lord has brought Jewish people across my path. I believe some have come to faith, and it's business central because we're 10 minutes away from the Walmart world. And there's a lot of business, and a lot of Jewish businessmen are passing by our area. And one of the things that our ministry really has developed is teaching the church how to reach its Jewish neighbor. And so I'm finding it's very important to assist the church in having some resources and some understanding of Jewish life, culture, beliefs today, or lack of them, perhaps. So that we can share the gospel with Jewish people. And so that's, even in Arkansas, I've been enabled to do that. I've had the privilege of being able to do that in some of the local churches there. And I know a number of those folks do have Jewish friends and Jewish contacts, even in that business world.
And as far as CWI, Christian Witness to Israel, in order to be a representative of a Christian witness to Israel, what needs to be a part of your theological background and so on? What are the parameters of the theology?
Well, I think I get opportunities right across the board in many, many diverse churches, I would say. But in terms of working for Christian Witness to Israel, we do desire, we demand that everyone is able to sign up to one of the Reformed confessions. So you do need to be theologically reformed to work for Christian Witness to Israel. But above all of that, you need to have a heart for Jewish mission, and you need to have an evangelistic zeal. And you know, sometimes we can have all our theology in place and have no passion or no zeal for the lost.
And you can be lost yourself.
Yes, you can. So, I'm answering your question and saying we are specifically a Reformed mission, and all our staff need to be in the Reformed camp in terms of our confessional status. But what I would desire most of all is that we would have that evangelistic zeal for Jewish people and for the lost around the world.
And to your knowledge, how many other theologically reformed ministries to the Jewish people are there?
Well, there are several Jewish missions that are reformed, and I think what I would say internationally, we're probably the only international Jewish mission that is reformed, but there are a number of localized Jewish missions that are reformed, and we have good relations with them. And again, I would stress that the church is bigger than just our own theological position. And therefore, Jewish mission is bigger than our own theological position. And I have a lot in common with my friends in other ministries that wouldn't maybe dot every I and cross every T of my theology, but I have a lot of respect for them. I think the missions, and I would use that term very loosely, that I don't have respect for, and the Israel missions that I don't have respect for, are those that won't evangelize the Jewish people. And sadly, there are some of those around that think that there's a back door into heaven for Jewish people.
You mean like John Hagee's ministry?
Well, you know, that's what he has stated, it would appear. And the sad reality is that naive people are naive and Christians are supporting that ministry, which, in my understanding, is happy to see Jewish people go to a lost eternity. If you're not willing to evangelize, if you're not willing to show Jewish people the Savior, Jesus, without whom no man can see the Father, then we're content with their lostness. My CEO in London, Joseph Steinberg, is a Jewish believer. And he, tells very passionately of the time when a Gentile crossed that line and spoke to him about Jesus. And he really wants to instill that same kind of intentionality in the Gentile church and in the Gentile Christian world, that we will be willing to cross that line into Jewish territory to tell Jewish people about Jesus. And Joseph's, very passionate about that and really concerned, because he said, my own Jewish mother died without knowing her Messiah. So, you know, for a so-called Christian pastor to think that there's a back door into heaven or another way for Jewish people, he's willing to let them go to a lost eternity. That's a person, in my book, that doesn't love Israel.
And he does not have a biblical concept of man, of sin, of the nature of man. It is just amazing how he could think that by virtue, I'm assuming he is saying that those who are keeping the law, and how he thinks this is possible, I'm not sure, if he's a Christian and knows the Word of God, how can he actually believe we are capable of keeping the law perfectly?
I believe, and I may get the quote slightly wrong, but and so forgive me and don't hold me to it, but I believe that I have a quote somewhere from the Houston Chronicle that whereby he is quoted as saying, Torah observant Jews are already in covenant with God and do not need to come to the Messiah.
And when you think about the stoning of Stephen, and you think about the New Testament church, which was predominantly Jewish, they did not have that message to the Jewish people.
There was no dual covenant in the first century.
Right.
You know, John Hagee believes in a dual covenant. And I see that as heresy. There is only the one covenant, and there is the new covenant. And Paul went to every synagogue that he could find, and every Jewish person he could find, even though he was the apostle to the Gentiles. Oh, Paul, what are you doing? You're the apostle to the Gentiles. No, I got to go to the synagogue first. I'm sorry, I got to go in there first, to the Jew first. And he would go into the synagogue, and he would preach Christ. And look at Peter on the day of Pentecost. What did he preach? Did he preach, let's all keep the law, and let's do all these things. No, he preached Christ on the day of Pentecost in front of all the Jewish people that were there for the festival, for the Jewish festival of Pentecost. And they were cut to the heart. They saw their sin, and they saw their Savior. And by the grace of God, the Spirit of God fell on that day. So I don't know where that kind of theology comes from. It doesn't come from the Scriptures. And I don't, but the sad thing about me, I just want that diminished. In fact, there's a sense in which I don't even really want to talk about it, because I would much rather us concentrate on the more positive things of the gospel. But it's out there. It's part of it's a big part of American Christian life, standing with Israel, Christians united for Israel, friends of Israel. All of these things, mercy ministries to Israel, I can be okay with some of the mercy ministries. In fact, we engage in mercy ministries in some of the countries in Europe today. We have got a very effective evangelist that is specifically bringing the gospel through mercy ministries, dear friend of mine. So I'm okay with mercy ministries as long as it doesn't stop there. And I'm okay with our love for Israel as long as it doesn't stop there. That our love for anyone will be a love that wants to bring them the greatest love of all, the love of Jesus Christ. And if anyone shrinks back from that, we are not doing them any favors. In fact, we are doing them an eternal disfavor. And so I just don't know where he gets it from the Scriptures. But there again, my concern is that the naive Christian public that are pouring their dollar into these mega empires, that just stops. And that by the teaching of God's word and by the dissemination of truth and real gospel mission to the Jewish people, and even the little that we might do, I would hope that those empires would just fade away.
Hmm. And does the Christian Witness to Israel organization have any official position on the nation that we call Israel in the Middle East, formerly known as Palestine? Do they have an official position on that?
We don't have an official position on it. Our workers will actually have diverse positions on it, even within our staff. So it's never been something that we have wanted to state a position on. But I know some dear friends of some of my staff are very passionate for the nation of Israel, and others couldn't care less about the nation of Israel per se, except to say that we are all concerned for the 45% of the world's Jewish population that mm-hmm. live in the land of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So our interest in the land is a saving interest in the land. The piece of dirt can't be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul doesn't say in Romans 10:1, my heart's desire is for the piece of dirt. My heart's desire is for Israel, the people. And so our desire for anything pertaining to things in the Middle East, our salvation desires, and for the 45% of the world's Jewish population that are there, and our desires are for them and for their salvation. And so we are interested. We watch the Middle East. We're concerned. We're concerned about safety, as we are concerned about the safety of Christians in other countries in the Middle East that are being killed and persecuted and a ton of other things. Those are our concerns. We're not concerned about a piece of land. But as I said, some of our staff are very passionate about the land and see prophetic significance to the land, and others of our staff see no significance to that. I've often said, and I can't remember whether I said this last time when you were interviewing me, I said, when I say that at meetings, I will give you my opinion privately for a donation. But so I don't go off and tell it, because I know, you know, as I represent CWI, we have diverse opinions, and I want to keep the peace, let's say, among my brethren.
Right. And we have dispensationalist brethren. I mean, I have very close friends who I love who are dispensationalists who agree with me on a lot of my theological views, including my Calvinism, some of them. And one in particular is a sponsor of this show. But I think, don't you agree that our dispensationalist brethren and some involved in the Messianic movement are very quick to pull the trigger and accuse those who have a different view of the nation of Israel as being anti-Semitic, when they would view that nation not as being a direct fulfillment of biblical prophecy? Now, obviously, if you are theologically reformed and a Calvinist, and you believe that God is sovereign over all things that ever have occurred and ever will occur in heaven and on earth, obviously God was in control over that nation being formed. But they would say that that is just God's providence apart from the scriptures, those who have a different view of Israel. And it is interesting that the Hasidic community, and I believe even most of the other Orthodox community, was very opposed to the forming of the nation initially, because it was really the liberal Jews who were the Zionists.
That's right. It was a secular nation, and so
it still is.
It still is. It very much so. It is not the Holy Land. If you visit certain parts of Israel today, you will see a lot of unholiness. But yes, the ultra-Orthodox would be strongly opposed.
Most of them, anyway.
Most of them are opposed to the nation state, because it's a secular state, and they are looking for Messiah to come to set up the theocracy again, to set up that religious state.
And so therefore it is a, I mean, obviously somebody could be against the nation of Israel and be an anti-Semite. You could be in the Ku Klux Klan or the American Nazi Party and have that view. But that doesn't, that view of the nation not being a direct fulfillment of prophecy has nothing to do with anti-Semitism.
No, I would think, you know, I do think we have to consider what do the scriptures say concerning the people, Israel, and keep going back to that. And whether it be 45% of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel, or 42% of the Jewish people living here in the United States, or the other percentages as they are in the UK, in France, in Europe, in Australia, New Zealand, where we've got staff all around the world in these various Jewish locations. Our interest must be in the people rather than the land. But nonetheless, the land issue is there. I have to say, personally, maybe I'm sneaking out some personal opinions here, but I have to say that after 1900 years and seeing the re-emergence of the nation state of Israel, I have to, as you've rightly said, the Lord is sovereign in these things, and I have to see a significance in that. But I see the major significance as being saving not just a politics of the Middle East. You know, in 1948, there were 12 Jewish believers in the land of Israel. In 1968, there were 50 Jewish believers in the land of Israel. In 1998, there were 5,000 Jewish believers. And today, they're reckoning the numbers around 20,000 Jewish believers. So the desert is blossoming, you know, and spiritually, the desert, the dry bones of the house of Israel are blossoming. And Spurgeon did our annual sermon on Ezekiel 37, on the Valley of Dry Bones. And he preached that specifically with regard to the dry bones of the house of Israel, and how we must be preaching to those bones. We must bring the word. As the prophet was taken and saw bones that were very dead and very dry, so today we see the people of Israel as being spiritually dead and dry. Like I've been to some synagogues. I've listened to some rabbis It's dryness. It's nothingness. It's get in touch with your God. Get in touch with that divine spark within you. It's philosophical mumbo jumbo. There's a deathness. There's a dryness. There's a deadness to Jewish life today. Judaism is dead. It's dry. So we are to preach the gospel of a Jewish Messiah to those bones. But then, what is the prophet told to do? Pray for the wind. And Spurgeon rightly would point out that our preaching and our strategizing and our evangelizing and our getting the message out to Jewish people, we can't win the argument. Or we may win an argument, but we can't save a soul. So it's not a matter of us getting every, we'll show them Isaiah 53, we'll show them the Messianic Psalms, and when we get all that right, then we'll win them. No, we must be praying. We must be praying for the wind of God. And one of the things in which I bring forth as I'm preaching in churches is that you pray for our missionaries. Our missionaries are skilled, are experienced, are gifted. We have some graced knowledge of Judaism and the Jewish people and their needs. But ultimately, it is the Lord who takes the veil away from their eyes. So people, church people, people who are listening to this, pray. Pray for the wind of God to blow upon those bones and bring them to life.
And why do you think that the even amongst the believing Jewish community, it appears that there is such a tiny minority who are actually theologically reformed?
You know, I think that's a tough question. I don't have a complete answer to that, except to say that when I was converted, was I reformed? I don't know. But the story that I've told you thus far is that my reformedness was a progression. Mm-hmm. It was a growth in the things of God. And I would simply say, by way of parallel, the Jewish church, if you want to put it in those terms, the Messianic community, and I don't mean Gentiles dressing up as Jews, and that's another issue. I'm talking about Messianic Jews who are ethnic Jews who believe in the Messiah Jesus. Mm-hmm. The Messianic community, as it really is a very young community. The church in Israel, in that sense, in terms of Jewish believers, as I've just pointed out, since 1948, the Messianic community there is a very young church, if you want to put it in those terms. And therefore, the whole issue and questions and theology is still at a youthful stage. And we in the Reformed Church are helping and seeking to help in the land and elsewhere to develop a substantial theology among Jewish believers. But just as all of us, we come through a progression of understanding. I think that may be where the Jewish believers are today.
And of course, the Reformed faith is today a minority anyway.
Well, yes. Is there a great love for substantiality? Is there a great love for thinking today? Perhaps not. We want the quick fix. We want the instant coffee. We want the instant religion. We want to sign the card, walk the aisle, and have Jesus as the cherry on our cake of the American dream. We don't want to think substantially, pertaining to what is sin, what is my heart, what did Christ do, what is the atonement, what is the cross, what is the substitution, all those things that are Jewish. And it saddens me that one of the things that is lacking in the modern church today is a Hebrew understanding, a Hebraic understanding, and an Old Testament understanding of the Christ and the religion that is called Christianity. Edith Schaefer wrote a book, Christianity is Jewish. And it's a great book, and it points in a very helpful way to the Jewish roots of our religion. But you ask many Christians today, they don't really know what actually is a Messiah. What is the atonement? We know so little. The lack of substantiality is because the lack of our understanding of the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament.
Edith Schaefer, is that Francis Schaefer's wife?
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going to be going to our second break. And this is going to be launching into our second hour of this interview. If you'd like to join us on the air, please email us at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please give us your first name, city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. You may remain anonymous only if this is a personal or private issue that you're asking about. Perhaps you're asking something that would be in contradiction to what your own church teaches and you don't want to identify yourself. That's understandable. We look forward to hearing from you after these messages, so don't go away.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Attention coin collectors and investors. Long Island Galleries of Wading River, New York has brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars for only $54 per coin, with free shipping and handling for a limited time. There's a 40-coin limit, so order now while supplies last. Call 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express welcome. Prices subject to change, so call now at 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. If you prefer ordering your brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars by check, mail it today to Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. That's Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. Remember, they're only $54 per coin with free shipping and handling and a 40-coin limit. New York State residents must add sales tax. Long Island Galleries is honored to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. See the Long Island Galleries display ad at ironsharpensironradio.com.
Raven Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Blending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen. If you've just tuned us in for the last hour, we have been interviewing Stephen Atkinson, who is the North American director of A Christian Witness to Israel. And in fact, Stephen Atkinson is going to be speaking tomorrow night, that's Wednesday night, the 30th of September, at Grace Baptist Church of Carlisle, Pennsylvania. They're on 777 West North Street on the corner of Orange in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Their phone number is 717-249-4912, 717-249-4912, and their website is gracebaptistcarlisle.org, gracebaptistcarlisle, that's carlisle.org. I also want to let you know about another sponsor of ours, the Word of Truth Church in Farmingville, New York, Pastor Bruce Bennett and the Word of Truth Church in Farmingville invite you to join them at their 6th annual Bible conference on October 2nd and 3rd. This year's topic will be eschatology, a biblical examination of the four major end time views. We are pleased to have Pastor Chris Pandolfi, Dave Corson, Mark Grimaldi, who is actually my guest tomorrow on Iron Sharpens Iron, and Rich Jensen presenting one of the four views each. The conference will have five sessions. Session one will be on Friday, October 2nd at 7 p.m., and Pastor Chris Pandolfi defends premillennial dispensationalism. Session two will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday, as Pastor Dave Corson defends historical premillennialism. Session three at 11:15 a.m. has Pastor Mark Grimaldi defending amillennialism, and then lunch will be served after that session. And session four will begin at 1:30 p.m. as Pastor Rich Jensen defends postmillennialism. Dinner will be served at 5:45, and session five will start at 7 p.m. by Anthony Uvinio, hosting a roundtable discussion with all four pastors, with audience questions being fielded during the roundtable discussion. The conference is absolutely free of charge, and offerings are accepted. Word of Truth Church is located at 1055 Portion Road in Farmingville, Long Island, New York, and they can be reached by calling 631-806-0614, or on the internet at wotchurch.com. That's W-O-T, standing for Word of Truth, church.com. And we want to thank the Word of Truth Church of Farmingville, New York, for being a sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron. And we have Joshua on Long Island, New York, has a question: that why does the Reformed faith itself have such a bad reputation for being guilty of anti-Semitism?
I think anyone that would read the documents pertaining to the Reformed faith would dispute that question. I think, though, there are quotes that we could take from Martin Luther that are really vitriolic and very clearly anti-Semitic. There are aspects of Calvin that was much more kindly disposed towards Jewish people and Jewish mission, though the reality was that the Jews were still expelled from Geneva. I think, again, we can look at the sayings of some of our Reformed heroes and say, well, you know, this was anti-Semitic. But if to answer the questioner's point, the Reformed theology, per se, I don't think is anti-Semitic. In fact, if we read the Westminster documents, not only Westminster Larger Catechism question 191, but the Westminster Directory for Public Worship, calls on all pastors to pray for Jewish mission every Lord's Day. So again, 1600s, they are burdened for Jewish mission. They are desiring the calling of the Jews and praying for that. And Samuel Rutherford, a good Scots Presbyterian who was one of the Westminster Assembly in the 1600s, was actually prayed to God that he would be kept out of heaven so that he would see the gathering of the Jewish people. His desire would, please, Lord, you know, I want to see thee and thine ancient kirk in mutual embraces. He desired. So I would say that we could get quotes from some of our heroes, good, bad, and ugly. But Reformed theology, I would believe, is strongly not anti-Semitic, but rather having a burden for Jewish mission. One of the things, again, to answer the question, I think one of the problems we have is that perhaps our Reformed churches don't know their own roots and don't know their own theology. And that is one of the things that I seek to do, is to remind my Reformed brethren that, you know, your heroes, you might say, if we are allowed heroes, believed very strongly in these things, most of them. And, you know, really desired that burden and desired that that calling of the Jews. So I can see why the caller can say that. But if we would just look at our documents and Reformed theology, there is the aspect also that some Reformed churches, and but I may suggest that they may be deformed churches rather than Reformed churches, have been anti-Semitic, and there are some that have divested funds from Israel, and there are some that are blatantly anti-Semitic and pro-Palestinian and political in the way in which they operate. I just question some of their understanding of the Reformed faith.
Would that be here in the States or more in Europe?
I would say both.
Really?
Yeah. My colleagues in London are facing issues with an increasing anti-Semitism. Europe is finding increasing anti-Semitism. But, you know, if you go back historically, the anti-Semitism largely came out of a theology.
Right.
You know, it came out of Roman Catholicism, the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
The pogroms really came out of, you know, Russian Orthodox or Eastern Orthodox religion. It was a replacementism that they believed in that issued forth then in an anti-Semitic bent. But the Lord, you know, the Lord is sovereign through all of these things. And the Lord has preserved his people despite anti-Semitism in all its ugly forms. And I think one of my colleagues in the UK, I've often quoted him, and he said, you know, if the Lord is finished with Israel, he has a funny way of showing it. Because the reality is, Israel is still here, the Jewish people are still here, and he's saving more Jewish people than ever before. And therefore, God is not done with Israel. Let me tell you a little story just to illustrate this very point. Anti-Semitism. Let's go back to the 1600s again. Let me take us time travel. The year is 1654. Those of you who know your American history will know Jamestown was settled in 1607. Pilgrim fathers came to Plymouth in 1620. And there was another growing settlement, and it was called New Amsterdam. Let me continue the story. Holland, which was favorably disposed towards the Jewish people, had started to colonize the new land masses. So the Jewish community in Holland made its way to form a Jewish community in Brazil. 1654, the Portuguese took over Brazil, and because of Portugal's Catholic anti-Semitism, the Jews were expelled from Brazil and sent back to Holland. One of those ships was pirated, and the Jewish occupants were left to die at sea. The boat limped along the coast and finally came ashore in New Amsterdam. 23 Jewish men, women, and children, and they formed a new community in a town that was later called, what? New York.
Hmm.
So 23 preserved from the anti-Semitism. And I've been tempted to call that the Pirates of Providence, in that those 23 were preserved and they formed the first Jewish community in New Amsterdam, later known as New York. God has preserved his people. And as we see it theologically, he has preserved them for a purpose. So neither Haman nor Hitler will deal their wicked death blow to the Jewish people. God may, in the mystery of that strange providence, he may allow a certain Holocaust. You know, we hesitate even to comment upon that, the horror of it. I'm currently reading a book by Martin Gilbert on the Holocaust, 800 pages, and it's tough reading. I read, you know, maybe 15 or 20 pages, and I just got to put it down again. It's tough reading. But God has preserved his ancient people and has kept them and, yes, brought them back to their land. Is there providence in that? Yes, you bet there is. And in that land, he is showing them Jesus. And in the U.S. and elsewhere around the world, I believe in a sovereign God. I believe in his saving purposes, and they're not yet complete. There are irrevocable promises held out yet, according to Romans 11, for this ancient people. So whether it be the Pirates of Providence, or whether it be the Bonhoeffers or the Corrie ten Booms, God preserves his people from the anti-Semitism. But to answer the question again, theology really will affect our missiology. And I think the theology of Romanism developed into the anti-Semitism. The theology of Reformed faith, I trust, will develop into a great and saving love for the Jewish people.
And if you truly believe in your Reformed faith, we believe that God's elect come from out of every tribe and people and tongue and nation, and therefore that would include the Jews.
Absolutely. And we believe in God's perseverance mm-hmm. with sinning saints. You know, if God is done with Israel, then I worry about my own salvation. If God can, you know, just suddenly say, well, you know, you Jewish people, yeah, you've really blown it this time. Okay, I'm just going to cast you off, and I'm no more dealings with you. And some theologians will say that. And yet some of those same theologians will say, but God preserves us, and God perseveres with us. So, you know, if I'm a Calvinist, and I believe in the 5 points and the perseverance of the saints, mm-hmm. then I believe God perseveres with this sinning saint that's seated next to you. So I believe he perseveres with those rebels mm-hmm. that he has not done with yet, and he will bring them to himself and graft in again the natural branches, and there will be such a glorious mystery of the mercy that we will exalt our great King for being merciful to rebel sinners, Jew and Gentile.
And going back to someone like Luther, I have heard someone who has studied Luther in great depth distinguish between his hatred for a religion that rejected Christ, i.e. Judaism, and being anti-Semitic in an ethnic sense. That this specific individual defended Luther as not being ethnically anti-Semitic, like, for instance, the subsequent centuries later, the Nazis, who it didn't matter if you converted to Christianity.
No, that's right.
They hated ethnic Jewish people and wanted them eradicated from the face of the earth. They were evolutionists who believed that the Jews and other minorities, other non-Aryan, if you will, people were closer to the apes and on and on. They despised Jewish people for what they were from birth, and that had nothing to do with a religion, because they would even dig out the ancestral roots of Christians, and if they were had Jewish roots, those people were sent to the camps too. So
that's right.
This person who was defending Luther and not excusing the horrible things he said, he was differentiating between Luther's anti-Judaism distinguishing between that and anti-Semitism. And what do you think about that?
I don't think I could go along that line.
Okay.
Because some of Luther's sayings were so personal.
Okay.
And you know, he said that they should be put out of their homes and their synagogues destroyed, mm-hmm. and these poisonous, envenomed worms made to earn their bread by the sweat of their noses. I don't think that's just a statement on Judaism. That's mm-hmm. anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. And we can't excuse it. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to realize that the best of men are men at best. Mm-hmm. And Luther was a man of his time. And under God, he was used as no other in the reclamation of the biblical gospel. But he got it wrong mm-hmm. on Israel and the Jewish people.
It shows you how much we need the blood of Christ, because on our own, even the best of Christians are failures in so many ways.
Absolutely. You know, Luther, on his closing, on his final sermon before he died, he pleaded that all the Jews be expelled from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I don't think that's just a theological anti-Judaism bent. That's a rant against Jewish people. And I think we've got to own it. We've got to put our hands up and say, you know, and because Jewish people will tell that story, and that's a problem that we have. And mm-hmm. then Hitler takes Martin Luther and quotes him in Mein Kampf, and Hitler said that Luther was a great German, and what Luther began, I'm going to complete. Mm. In fact, Hitler said what Christ began, because Christ used the whip to drive out, as Hitler termed it, to drive out the Jews from the temple. And so you'll see the Nazis with their whips, And they were, and Hitler again said, what Christ began, I will complete. And so it was a theology, of, you might say the theology of Luther,
mm-hmm.
that then was taken and diabolically, transformed, of course.
And of course, cherry picking there.
Yes.
Because the Nazis were hardly, theologically Christian as a movement.
No.
They were occultic, and Hitler also had his fair share of things to say against Christianity
about, absolutely.
About being like a weak and pathetic, well, I think of Judaism.
From the perspective of Jewish mission, we need to remind ourselves that Jewish people today don't always see the differences.
Right.
And they see Hitler, a Catholic, mm-hmm. as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And they will say that there are 6 million reasons why Jews don't believe in Jesus.
Right.
Now, that's a tough one for us to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will quote Martin Luther, they will quote the church fathers at us, mm-hmm. Who, you know, like John Chrysostom, who said that God hates the Jews. God has always hated the Jews. Therefore, I hate the Jews. Mm-hmm. The golden mouth preacher, John Chrysostom, you know, that we can look at and read pertaining to some glorious themes. But again, best of men are men at best. But Jewish people, again, may cherry pick those quotes.
And of course, we have right in our New Testaments proof that bigotry and ethnic pride and hatred are not unique to Gentiles, because the mm-hmm. New Testament was primarily rebuking the Jews for that very sin.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you have people of all ethnicities and religious beliefs who, even if it's unconsciously, mm-hmm. are bigoted and racist and so on.
Well, I think we got to remember that the Jewish people did have an arrogance, and maybe even yet today have an arrogance, that we are God's chosen people. Now, why was that? Well, Hebrews chapter 1, in the past, God spoke to our forefathers. Wow, you know, he didn't speak to my forefathers. I'm Scots-Irish. My ancestors were dancing around stone in the highlands of Scotland and Northern Ireland or whatever. He didn't speak to my ancestors.
My relatives still do that.
I'm not going there. But he did speak to the Jewish people and their ancestors. And so when we're looking at Jewish people today, there is a sense in which they are very privileged. Now, that doesn't permit anyone to have an arrogance, and certainly not an arrogance before God, because as Paul said, you know, I am less than the least. And, you know, he recognized, even though he's a Hebrew of Hebrews, a true blue Jew, yet he needed to realize that before God, he was nothing, mm-hmm. as all of us need to, as a sinner in the hands of an angry God. But from that human perspective, we need also to realize, hey, these people were given a revelation when the rest of the world was walking in total darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can use that even in my evangelism. You know, there's a sense in which you are a chosen people. There's mm-hmm. a sense in which you have a wonderful past and privilege. Even Netanyahu, when he was speaking to Congress, he pointed up to the wall and pointed up to Moses, didn't he? So recognizing the biblical past, recognizing the historic and unique past that the Jewish people have, that doesn't give us grounds for an arrogance, but I think while we're bringing the gospel to all the nations under heaven, yes, we do need to see something of the scriptural drama that God has had an ancient people. God, that ancient people prayed for us. If you read Psalm 67 and discover that they were praying for Gentile mission 1,000 years before Christ, they were praying that we might know, that the nations would be glad, that the nations would know ours and God's salvation. What is that word? It's Yeshua. It's Jesus. So 1,000 years BC, they are praying that the nations would come to know Jesus. Wow. They were praying for us. And when the word of God and the gospel of a Jewish Messiah crucified on a hill outside Jerusalem, when that then gets spread to all the nations, should we then say, thank you very much, Jewish people, for giving us this wonderful gospel. Now we'll get on with evangelizing the rest of the world. You can just all go your own way. Surely if someone gives us something that has been the greatest blessing under God. Surely we want to pay back in some way. Surely we feel we owe a debt to those people or their descendants. Do we owe a debt to even Jewish people, their descendants? Do we owe a debt to Jesus' ethnic family? You bet we do. We were goyim. We were the unclean. But because of first century Jewish missionaries who wanted to tell the nations of the world about their God, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the God of their Messiah, Jesus, and he who is the very Son of God incarnate, they wanted to tell the Gentile world that, and they crossed lands to tell us. Surely, surely, church, we should recognize the debt that we owe to this people who now do not know their Messiah. And we will want, as McShane very ably said, we will want us to have the same disposition that God has. And that is not, as Chrysostom said, God hates the Jews. Rather, in Romans 11:28, they are enemies on account of the gospel, but they are loved on account of the patriarchs. So they are still loved by God, even as enemies. And therefore McShane was making that very valid point that we Christian church should have the same disposition as God towards this ancient people. And we should love them, and we have a debt, and we have a duty, and I trust also we have a dynamic. There's your 3-point sermon. A dynamic to bring the gospel. Romans 1:16. I am unashamed of the gospel. It is the power, the dynamic of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile.
Amen. And of course, the hurdle would be very similar when, especially trying to bring the Reformed faith to our African American neighbors and friends, because of the horrible things that even some of our heroes have said about them, and many of them were slave owners. And isn't it an awesome sign of God's sovereignty that even amongst the slaves who recognized that they were being treated as a lesser form of human, and sometimes even just like animals, depending upon what slave master they may have had, even those that treated them with great respect, it still was a comparatively less privileged life, if you will. Many of them became Christians. And that has to be the sovereignty of God. That why would they want to imitate the religion of their oppressor?
Yes, yes.
Other than the sovereignty of God.
Other than the sovereignty of God, and showing them the truth and the veracity of what the Word teaches.
Right. We do, before we go to a break, we have a listener in Haddon Heights, New Jersey. I didn't even know there was a Haddon Heights, New Jersey. Just thought of Charles Haddon Spurgeon there. God bless you for sharing the gospel to the Jewish people. It has been my observation that I learned a lot about covenants within the Messianic Jewish world prior to becoming Reformed. So when I became Reformed, a lot made sense. Would you concur, the segments of the Reformed world that aren't keen on Jewish missions are overreacting against the rise of dispensationalism? And that's Jeff in Haddon Heights, New Jersey.
Well, Jeff, you've taken the words right out of my mouth. I believe absolutely that we struggle to be balanced, and when we find something that we disagree with, we run a mile from it. And there's a sense in which that is that's good advice. But theologically, we may disagree with radical dispensationalism. And you know, I speak in dispensationalist churches. I have dispensationalist friends, and I have a lot in common with many. And for example, Jews for Jesus, Chosen People Ministries, other Jewish missions that would be different from us theologically. I have a huge respect and regard for such. I have no respect and no regard for those that don't believe in bringing the gospel to the Jewish people, and we've already gone there with books earlier. But I have a lot of respect for those that are evangelistic, who are dispensational. But I think the Reformed world, if I can go after my own kind for a moment, I think the Reformed world is terrified of being, and we tend to look over our shoulders and our peers rather than look, we're looking horizontally rather than vertically, just in case we might be deemed dispensation. I've been called a dispensationalist just because I have an interest in Israel. You know, that puts a big question mark upon Stephen Atkinson and maybe upon CWI. Are you secretly dispensational? You know, simply because we have a concern for Israel. And I think the Reform world is hypersensitive regarding dispensationalism or charismaticism or some of these other things, and so we distance ourselves immensely from it. Now, the reality is, it's true. There is a lot of confusion out there, and we need to clarify our position in the midst of all that confusion. One of the things that I've been seeking to do in Christian Witness to Israel is to get some high-powered endorsements of our ministry, not to be name-dropping and not simply to just to have these renowned names on our headed paper, as it were, but to, I suppose, cut through some of the mess. Mm-hmm. And so when I can say that Al Mohler and Ligon Duncan are on our advisory board, I'm so grateful to those men for standing with us and being willing to put their names to our literature. I have Derek Thomas on my executive board, and several others that I'm seeking out as well, and who shall be nameless at the moment, but I'm coming after you. But that kind of endorsement is simply to answer the question. There is such confusion out there, and if I can say, well, so-and-so and so-and-so are on our side, and McShane and Bonner and Spurgeon were standing with us in a former generation, surely you should stand with us today. Surely you should see that we are a kosher mission to the Jewish people.
Well, we're going to be going to our last station break. If you'd like to join us on the air, send an email at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please include your first name at least, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And please only remain anonymous if it's a personal and private matter. We look forward to hearing from you and your questions after these messages, so don't go away.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Paul Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402, or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Are you a Christian looking to align your faith and finances? Then you'll want to check out Thrivent Financial. We're not your typical financial services provider. We're a not-for-profit Fortune 500 organization that helps our nearly 2.4 million members be wise with money. We provide guidance that reflects your values so you can protect what matters most. We help members live generously and strengthen the communities where they live, work, and worship. Learn more about the Thrivent story by contacting me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life. Lending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and if you've just tuned us in for the last 90 minutes, we have been interviewing Stephen Atkinson, who is the North American director of A Christian Witness to Israel, known predominantly as CWI, and this is a UK-based ministry, outreach to the Jews, that goes back over 100 years, and it is now has a North American branch there, where Stephen has relocated from Northern Ireland to Arkansas and is laboring there for the gospel to the Jews. And not only in Arkansas, of course, but throughout the United States. That is their goal, to reach the Jews with the true gospel of Jesus Christ. And CWI, as we have said earlier, is a theologically reformed ministry, Calvinistic in its soteriology, although it does allow for a diverse makeup of dispensationalist views. I mean, I'm sorry, eschatological views is what I meant to say. End times views. Our email address, if you'd like to join us on the air, is chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. And I just also want to thank another sponsor of ours, Providence Baptist Church of Norfolk, Massachusetts. Pastor Mark Lukens and the congregation at Providence Baptist Church have taken it upon themselves to sponsor our program. They find great value in it, and it blesses me more than words can say that they are willing to take a part of their budget every month to sponsor this program. They are a Reformed Baptist church adhering to the 1689 London Baptist Confession. Pastor Mark Lukens has been a guest on this program, and he is a wonderful brother. If you live anywhere near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or if you're planning to visit there, or if you have friends, family, and loved ones that live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, I urge you to look up their website, which is Providence Baptist Church, MA, for Massachusetts, .org. Providence Baptist Church, MA, .org. And they are, as I said, in Norfolk, Massachusetts, a 1689 London Baptist Confession adhering Reformed Baptist Assembly. And we thank them again from the bottom of our hearts for sponsoring this program. I also want to remind you that there is a Bible conference coming up. This is a conference that's being held by our friends at the Word of Truth Church in Farmingville, Long Island, New York. Pastor Bruce Bennett and the Word of Truth Church in Farmingville invite you to join them at their 6th annual Bible conference on October 2nd and 3rd. This year's topic will be eschatology, a biblical examination of the four major end time views. They are pleased to have pastors Chris Pandolfi, Dave Corson, Mark Grimaldi, and Rich Jensen presenting one of the four views each. The conference will have five sessions. Session one will be on Friday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. as Pastor Chris Pandolfi defends premillennial dispensationalism. Session two will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday, as Pastor Dave Corson defends historic premillennialism. And session three at 11:15 a.m. has Pastor Mark Grimaldi defending amillennialism. Lunch will be served after session three, and session four will begin at 1:30 p.m. as Pastor Rich Jensen defends postmillennialism. Dinner will be served at 5:45, and session five will start at 7 p.m. by Anthony Uvinio, hosting a roundtable discussion with all four pastors, with audience questions being fielded during the roundtable discussion. The conference is absolutely free of charge, and offerings will be accepted. Word of Truth Church is located at 1055 Portion Road in Farmingville and can be reached by calling 631-806-0614, 631-806-0614, or on the web at wotchurch.com. That's W-O-T for Word of Truth Church.com. And we thank the Word of Truth Church in Farmingville, Long Island, for helping to make Iron Sharpens Iron possible. Tell me something about exactly what it is that the Christian Witness to Israel does to bring the gospel to the Jewish people.
If I could put it in a nutshell, we seek to reach the Jewish people with the gospel, and we seek to teach the church to reach the Jewish people with the gospel. Our primary goal is to bring the gospel to the Jews. We do it in a number of ways. As you would with any cross-cultural ministry, as you would I suppose with any ministry, you've got to enter into their world. So, for example, we make some kind of connection. Friendship evangelism is I suppose the best kind of evangelism. I think it's the most biblical too. Although, you know, we can have a scattergun approach. We do door knocking. We do some tracting. But the best and lasting kind of evangelism is where you build up friendships and relationships. So a lot of our frontline missionaries will be doing that in various locations. Some will use music to do that. Some, because Jewish people are very artsy and very musical. So one of my missionary friends sings in a choir that has several other Jewish people singing in that choir. And she will make friendships, and she will build on those friendships and share the gospel. Another would use music by playing the piano. Another would use art and painting. Again, wherever Jewish people are, whatever is the way in which we can connect, then we will seek to use that as a means of showing the love. There has to be some way. It's as I was saying earlier, my colleague and CEO in London, Joseph Steinberg, says that a Gentile crossed that line to come into my world to tell me about Jesus. And we need to find whatever way it is to cross that line to enter into the Jewish world. You know, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 9, to the Jews I became as a Jew. What does that mean? Does it mean I put on a kippah and tallit and you know, walk around like I'm a Jew? No. In fact, I have a Jewish friend in Arkansas that said to me, why are these Gentiles dressing up as Jews? You know, just don't, you know, just don't. It's not Halloween. You know? So I think that's not 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9 is we need to enter into their world in some way. One of the things that we have been doing in North America is to develop a resource, and it's a work in progress, but to develop resources really, and seminars for how, teaching the church how to reach its Jewish neighbor. I recently did 4 studies, and they actually, there are available online on our website. And the 4 studies were the authorization of Jewish mission. What's the biblical basis? The arena of Jewish mission. What is the Jewish world today? What do they believe? Is it what we think they believe according to the Old Testament? No. The Jewish world today is 2,000 years removed from that with all kinds of rabbinic reinterpretations. What is the aroma of Jewish mission? How do we bring the fragrance of Christ into the Jewish people? And the final study was the aspiration of Jewish mission. What do we hope for in bringing the gospel to Jewish people? So I'm developing teaching resources and seminars. We've called it connecting with the Cohens, just as a kind of helpful name, because I think whenever we're seeking to reach across into another culture, we need to find that connector. So, you know, we are engaged in mercy ministries. For example, in Bulgaria, my colleague there is helping people medically, helping people financially, perhaps. Jewish people are not all wealthy, and certainly not in Eastern Europe. There are many very, very poor Jewish people. So if we can get alongside, connect in that way, we're doing that there. We're on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. We've got a bookstall, a book table. And Bondi Beach.
I've got a lot of listeners in Sydney, Australia.
There you
for some
go.
Reason.
Okay. Well, then called by my colleague there, Kay Chan Park, as he's doing the table outreach in Bondi Beach. We do door knocking in London. We do street evangelism in London. So wherever we are engaging the Jewish community in a way that is suitable and sensitive, perhaps, to the specific situation in which our missionaries find themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so also here in the U.S. And I think we are I could talk about my friends in Israel. Let me backtrack a little and talk about my colleagues in Israel. One of the things that we're doing there very specifically, my Israeli colleague David Zadok, he's the pastor of Grace and Truth congregation in Rishon LeZion, just outside a suburb of Tel Aviv. And so he and his church are very specifically reaching their Jewish neighbors. But also one of the things that they are doing are developing and translating good Christian books into modern Hebrew and translating commentaries into modern Hebrew. Because again, the Jewish church is young, as I was saying earlier. It's growing numerically. But in terms of substance, we want a greater Reformed substantiality. So if we can translate some of our good Reformed classics into modern Hebrew, that again is part of our ministry in Israel. And again, then when I look at the situation here, and I've only been here 3 years, so I'm developing even my own ministry as I grow in an understanding of what the needs are here. And I think the needs are very specifically to challenge the church to think about mission instead of thinking about blood moons and red heifers. Really. You know, I want to get, and also then to challenge my Reformed brethren, and not just to forget it, as the last emailer said, not to neglect Jewish mission just because we're Reformed. And so I want to teach the church. But also I want to enable the church to reach its Jewish neighbors, because we have Jewish mission right on our own doorstep. Jewish people are all around us here. 42% of the world's Jewish population are here. So I'm getting a lot more phone calls and emails from people in churches saying, could you please help me? Have you got some resources? How do I initiate a conversation? I've got a Jewish dentist. I've got a Jewish doctor. I've got a Jewish friend that I've known for 30 years, and she's dying. And how do I share the gospel with her, for example? And so more and more I'm finding my ministry is assisting the church to do its ministry. And I think it's what I was saying earlier, that Christian Witness to Israel isn't just a parachurch mission. It's really enabling the church to be its own Christian witness to the people Israel.
A number of years ago, I was contacted by a woman who was a journalist for an Orthodox Jewish newspaper, and I'm almost certain it was called the Jewish Voice, not to be confused with a Messianic Christian TV program or media ministry. But she wanted me to find a Orthodox Jew, an Orthodox Jew, who had went to shul and all that, who was really learned, who converted to Christianity. And she was very pleasant about it. But she was convinced that no one who really studied Judaism would become a Christian. And obviously, totally removing the sovereignty of God from the equation of this. And she told me to find one because she wanted to interview one, a former Orthodox Jew. And I started immediately calling my friends who were involved in Jewish evangelism, and every one that was Jewish came out of a nominal Reform home, or even if their parents were Orthodox, they were never really Orthodox themselves. And I could not find any. I mean, is she right? I mean, do you know of Orthodox believers who have become Christians?
I'm tempted to say the Apostle Paul.
I was thinking that also, but I mean, in our day,
well,
she might not even believe in the that he ever existed. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know all the backgrounds of the people that I would know that are Jewish believers. So I don't know how intensely they were either Orthodox or Reform or liberal or whatever. The reality is, yes, liberal Judaism is the dominant position here in the U.S. Liberal Judaism, Reform Judaism makes it easier for us in some ways to connect, because they're liberal, they're open to discuss, they're open to receive that forbidden book, the New Testament. And so we can share with the liberal nominal Jewish people. One that would come to mind, perhaps, and I don't know him personally. Michael Brown certainly knows his stuff when it comes to Mishnah, Torah, Midrash.
He may have learned that Talmud after becoming a Christian, though.
I don't know. I actually could not answer. But I do know he really does know his stuff. And I would be inclined to think that he had been immersed in that, from his childhood days. Jewish religion, Judaism and practice today is a pick and mix. And therefore, it can be atheistic Judaism, Buddhism, Buddhist Judaism. I think they're called Jubus. you can have really any level of Judaism that you like.
And it's interesting that many of the in the Jewish community will not view you as a traitor unless you become a Christian. You can become a Buddhist or an atheist or anything.
Exactly. You can believe anything. But if you become a Christian, then you are, you have betrayed your family. You've betrayed your history.
I know a Jewish brother who is involved in Messianic ministry. He was a male stripper, and his parents were only nominal Jews. They didn't keep a kosher home other than perhaps on high holy days and so on. Mm-hmm. And when he became a Christian, they sat shiva for him. They wrote him off.
Yes. He's
dead.
Yes.
And when he married a Gentile woman, this gentleman's mother, when they went to a funeral of a family member, the mother physically attacked the Gentile wife in the funeral parlor.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was just...
I can believe that. Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes. They will completely cut you off. Unless there is such a liberal approach to things. But generally speaking, they will cut you off. My colleague in Israel, he tells the story of how none of his family came to their wedding, you know, and he's a Jewish believer, married a Jewish believer, but his family were absent from his wedding because he was cut off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that my friend Marty Fromm, who is a dear friend of mine for about 25 years, I believe he had Orthodox Jewish parents, but I'm not so sure how seriously he took his Orthodoxy growing up.
Can I flip the tables here, and can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You know, I'm coming here as the Northern Irishman into this strange culture that's called America. Did you see the blood moon the other night? Are you eagerly stargazing?
No, I haven't. I'm ashamed of myself.
You're not okay. Well, here's my question: what's the fascination of Americans with blood moons?
I have no idea. I think it has something connection to a book that came out, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Other than that, I don't know.
I'll extend the question. What's the fascination with all the silly stuff? Why is there, you know, and please, this is not being patronizing in any way. This is deadly serious. I'm just wondering, as I come into U.S. culture, U.S. Mm-hmm. Christian culture, and we're not immune from crazy stuff back in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Far from it. We have our crazy folks. But because I'm seeking to challenge that. I'm seeking to channel that.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the most pro-Israel country on the planet. And as I said, probably for all the wrong reasons and in all the wrong directions. But what a powerful, potential there is. Mm-hmm. If we can challenge and channel that pro-Israel mindset into a biblical approach and a gospel approach to the ancient people. So I'm asking the question simply, why is there the fascination with the silly stuff? And what can I do to counter that?
Wow, that's something I'd have to put some more thought into. But I know that Americans love sensationalism. I know that you have, for instance, you know, the Pope Francis visiting the United States, and you have, I know, nominal Catholics who never go to church or very rarely go to church. They're all excited about the Pope being here, and some of them even went to Philadelphia trying to see him, and it was because really a celebrity who is a member of, and the leading member of their religion of birth, if you will, even though they're not practicing it. They're fascinated by that, and they wanted to see him. They wanted to tell their children and grandchildren that they saw this person and received mass from him. But I don't know if that, when he leaves the United States, are they going to become religious Catholics again? Or are they going to be starting to go to mass every day or every week? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it is just starstruck behavior. And I think that some things like this book, I don't even know the title of the Blood Moon book.
I think it's just called the Four Blood Moons or something
like
that.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that some of these things just capture the imagination, just like the movie that started out as a book, The Da Vinci Code, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, which had some blasphemous implications in it, but it actually got people who aren't even people of faith speaking about religious things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of interesting how people who never talk about Jesus in their casual conversations will all of a sudden speak about him when there's some scandal involved.
So you're suggesting that my solution to the American gullibility is that CWI becomes the new sensation. Isn't that it? I just need to get onto that world stage. I think that's it. No. I you know, the longer I've been in ministry and the way I've seen the finger of God upon my life and upon the life and work of any ministry that he delights to honor, it is as we approach everything humbly. It's as we approach everything with a godly manner. And I think there was one dear saint of all, I can't remember exactly, someone will email in and say who it was, but if we concentrate on the depth of our ministry, the Lord will give the extent of our ministry. And I think there is a sense in which we need to be substantial in our own Christian lives, in our walk with the Lord, in our own personal godliness, and then display that and deliver that. And deliver that even in the context of other Jewish friends. Romans, you know, speaks of provoking to jealousy. You know, we can have all the arguments, we can have all the strategies, and I've got the four volumes of Michael Brown's Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, and I've read them all. And I can have all the various arguments and strategies, but the bottom line, salvation is of the Lord, and we need to progress our ministries in a godly manner, and he, in his perfect time, will give that divine increase.
And I hope that you have the opportunity sometime to have a meal or a get-together with Michael Brown so that perhaps you can be an influence upon him with the doctrines of grace. I know that my friend, actually, I don't think that you know Dr. James White, but mm-hmm, my friend James White, I know, knows him very well, and they're very close friends, and I'm hoping that that can happen through...
That would be wonderful.
Dr. Mm-hmm. White and his friendship with Michael Brown, because he is certainly brilliant and a gifted
brother. We would
have
our differences theologically, and as I do with many of these men, and as we always do. But I've sat in on I've been into congregations, and I've delivered my spiel to certain congregations. And then there was one situation that which shall be nameless, but I remember it very vividly. And it was a Reformed church. And I went along and spoke, and the guy at the end of the meeting said, you know, I've been with you, I'm with you 99% of what you're saying. He said, but I've just this 1% that I'm concerned about. And for the next hour and a half, we debated that 1%. And I thought, you know, please, really? You know, why didn't we talk about the things that keep us together? And so, you know, I can have my differences with Jews for Jesus or Chosen People or others. Praise the fact that Jews for Jesus are doing a marvelous work. Mm-hmm. I had lunch and dinner with Dave Brickner in April, the head of Jews for Jesus. He even bought me my dinner, so I've got to say nice things about him. and so I have a huge respect for such things, and we're working together on those kingdom purposes of bringing the gospel back to the ancient people.
Amen. And of course, you would be very opposed to any organization that would present itself under the umbrella of messianic Jewishness that would seek to bring the Judaizers back into prominence and you know, seek to turn Gentile Christians into Jews and all that kind of thing.
I think that, you know, some Gentiles think that that's one, either a way to get closer to God or two, a way to get closer to the Jewish people. It is neither. Mm-hmm. And Jewish people will tell them that. Just don't stop playing the game. Just be Gentiles.
A mutual friend of ours, who actually is a native of Israel, Tel Aviv, he doesn't like when churches use the Passover celebrations and things like that, even though he does them as tradition and custom in his own home. He doesn't like when churches use them as a vehicle for evangelism. What do you think about that?
You know, I did a Passover Seder, Christ in the Passover, at my church in Covenant, Covenant Church in Fayetteville. Jewish lady and her family came along to that. And at the end of that meeting, she said, you know, we had our own family Passover the previous week, or previous few days, and she said, ours was dry, but yours had the spirit.
Mm.
Wow, that's a Jewish person saying about my presentation. She said, I saw certain things in your presentation of the Passover that I'd never seen in my Jewish life. So I can see merit in that. Again, as long as we're doing it as Christ in the Passover,
mm-hmm.
and not doing it, think, isn't this wonderful? Ooh, and ah, this is Jewish stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No, we must present Christ because he is our Passover lamb that has been slain for us.
Yeah.
And for Jewish people to do that, Jewish believers to do that, I'm okay with that, because that's been their life. But to see Christ in it, wow, they can see the fulfillment.
And we're out of time, and I hope that everybody listening always remembers for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner. God bless, and look up CWINA.org, CWINA.org, for Christian Witness to Israel, North America. Hope you tune in tomorrow to Iron Sharpens Iron. God bless.